The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I've always said that we will recognize a Palestinian state as a contribution to a proper peace process at the moment of maximum impact for the two-state solution. With that solution now under threat, this is the moment to act. So today, as part of this process towards peace, I can confirm the UK will recognize the state of Palestine by the United Nations General Assembly in September, unless the Israeli government takes substantive steps to end the appalling situation in Gaza, agree to a ceasefire, and commit to a long-term sustainable peace, reviving the prospect of a two-state solution. And this includes allowing the UN to restart the supply of aid and making clear that there will be no annexations in the West Bank.
What is your view on what the British Prime Minister said today, that if the UK is going to recognize a Palestinian state unless Israel has ended the humanitarian crisis?
Well, I think France went further than that recently, and I think the world is, look, sadly, really sadly, Israel is becoming a pariah nation. And all over the world, people are looking at a situation where the government of Israel under Netanyahu and his right-wing extremist friends are starving children, and people are trying to do one thing or the other, get food in there, or at least tell Netanyahu that if he doesn't move in a very different direction, they're going to be recognizing the Palestinian state. And by the way, when you talk about a two-state solution, it's not only a horror in Gaza. Israeli settlers are shooting Palestinians on the West Bank, are destroying their property, and you have vigilantism on the West Bank as well.
I've had a position on this whole war from the start, that what happened on October the 7th was utterly horrific, that of course Israel had to defend itself with force, which they did. But I kept saying from the start, for a few months, I don't know what a proportionate response is. It seemed like the response was overwhelming. And at what point would that cease to be proportionate? And I've been really dismayed in the last few months by the way it seems to me that the Israeli government has moved from a position of self-defense to one of just obliterating Gaza, perhaps expelling all Palestinians, as people like Smotrich and the government are now openly saying, and starving children.
It's time. It's time now. Israel, whether it realizes it or not, has made itself the villain of the world in letting this thing go on so long. They have lost support amongst their dearest friends. And even the entire Democrat Party here in the United States has turned against them, and they're losing Republicans by the day here in America, which is their most important ally. So whether the fight continues to be just or not is almost irrelevant. As Trump said when he was running this time last year, not yet elected, time to wrap it up. And that's how I feel, too. And I've given Israel a long berth. I fully understand, as an American who was attacked on 9/11, my country was, that, you know, when you attack the United States and you kill thousands of our citizens, and Israel was in this position on 10/7, it's fine to respond. And it doesn't have to be proportionate. Whoever said it has to be proportionate, it can be overwhelming force to teach a lesson to any enemy. You mess with us, it's going to be extremely painful, disproportionately painful for you. I have no problem with that. But what Israel's doing now is losing its standing with the rest of the world.
Hamas is celebrating, for sure. They're winning the propaganda war. Look at the, whether conservative, liberal, anywhere in between. Look at, I mean, the Prime Minister of Britain basically saying, Israel, you better stop, or we recognize Palestine. What does that even mean? What would it be? Who would lead it? As I say, this is quite a stunning victory for the terrorist proxy of Iran. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Look at, and we went through this yesterday. I don't want to rehash everything, but look at how much sickness there is in this evil world. I mean, the way people are reasoning, that was Megyn Kelly there saying that whether the fight continues to be just, it just doesn't matter anymore. If it's a just battle, you still have to stop, because these are the rules for war, at least for the Israelite nations here in 2025. You can only go to a certain point. You can't actually vanquish the enemy. You can't actually force a surrender. No, you just have to go to a certain point. And then, I mean, with the propaganda, with the Muslim infiltration, particularly in Britain, he's preaching to a wave of Islam that they've invited into the country, the UK. He needs their votes. The Labour Party loses power if they don't come out with a... And the thing of it is, how's this? The Labour Party is not radical enough for the Islamic element of Britain. They want you to be pro-Hamas in every respect. But look at the words that even commentators are throwing out. Israel's the pariah. Israel's the enemy, the villain. They don't even say this about Hamas anymore. When have you heard a commentator say that Hamas is a pariah state? If you want a Palestinian state, Why don't you just rewind to October 6th, 2023? Because that's what you had in the Gaza Strip. Israel, back in 2005, forcibly removed every last Jew from Gaza. And Hamas took over all of those kibbutzim and those Jewish businesses and ruined a lot of them, destroyed a lot of them. They plundered them. They had total control. You can go back to 2006 when Gaza had a democratic vote. And who did they vote in? Hamas. And there hasn't been a vote since. They've used all of that so-called humanitarian aid to build the tunnel network, to acquire weapons. And then October 7 happened. Is there anyone that's lived long enough or has a long enough memory to think that, you know, maybe giving them their own state in 2005 wasn't the way to go? Because look at what they did in 2023. And now they're the victim. And now, I mean, they're running with the humanitarian nightmare hoax, the starvation hoax. I went through that in quite a lot of detail yesterday. Go back and look, and again, go back even further to root causes here. And you see the devil behind it. Why are there so many sick people? I mean, sick in the head. Why can't they reason? Why is there no soundness in their judgment? No wisdom, no understanding. They invite in the Muslim world, and we'll get to that a little bit later as well. But for Prime Minister Starmer to come out with that announcement, and this follows Macron, like I think it was last week. So France, Britain, betrayal of Israel. I mean, Britain is pretty much conquered. They've pretty much surrendered to the enemy. I mean, let's just say it like it should be said. Maybe a Farage will come along and they'll follow in the way of Jeroboam, as it says in Hosea. But even when you look at what Jeroboam is saying, it's not like there's a lot of strength. We're not exactly projecting strength to Hamas, to Iran, to Israel's enemies in the Middle East. And here again, you look at the prophecies of this brotherhood alliance unraveling. And that's what we're seeing. Israel, says Megyn Kelly, you know, it's just gone on a little bit too long. Why is that? Well, because of Israeli division, internal division, because of rogue judges, just like we have in the States, just like they have in the UK. Put someone in jail for an offensive tweet, but don't dare say anything derogatory about a Muslim. If you do that, boy, you'll go, you will pay. You will pay. Well, that's what I meant with the offensive tweet. That's what happens. And meanwhile, you have these rape gangs. And there's a story today. These witnesses coming forward saying that, you know, it wasn't just the Muslim rape gangs. It was also the law enforcement. Some of them were raped by the police. BBC says this: 5 women who were exploited by grooming gangs in Rotherham as children say they were also abused by police officers in the town at the time. One was raped from the age of 12 by a serving South Yorkshire police officer in a marked police car. He would threaten to hand her back to the gang if she did not comply. In a world where you are being abused so much, being raped once by a police officer, it was a lot easier than multiple rapes by the gang. And I think he knew that. So the police officer thought, well, if you want to be gang raped, then don't give me what I want here. It's like Britain has invited in a wave of Jeffrey Epsteins, and they're all conducting this sex traffic ring in Rotherham or wherever. And then how many of them have been punished like they should have been punished? How many have gone away for life to prison? I don't know enough about the details to tell you. I just know it's a sick world. Imagine inviting Jeffrey Epstein into your country and saying, have at it. I mean, our law enforcement, they're afraid to say anything that could be construed as Islamophobic. So chances are they'll turn a blind eye to your crimes. In some cases, they may participate in those crimes as well. We're dying by suicide. In an earlier time period, October, if October 7 happens, and of course Israel was caught sleeping on that day, lots of security breakdowns and intelligence failures and so on. We went through that when we were over there with those interviews a few weeks ago. But in an earlier time, if October 7 happens at Israel's southern border, on October 8, they are in total control of the Gaza Strip. And we'll get to Gadi Taub in just a second and what he said about how judges have basically handcuffed Bibi Netanyahu. And that's why it's carried out as long as it has. There was a time when Israel and Judah would really show some strength. Now, there is some lion-like courage coming from Bibi Netanyahu, not just in decapitating Hezbollah and the Gaza invasion and what he did with Iran a while back, but in how he's fighting the division in his own country. I mean, the deep state, as Gadi Taub has said, it is real, and it's been around just as long in Israel as it is in the United States. Longer. I mean, Bibi's been fighting it longer than Donald Trump has. Trump's been going at it for 10 years. For Bibi, it's more like 30 years. They want to destroy him. And it doesn't matter if Israel's at war with Hamas or whoever. As Taub said earlier this week, I mean, it's Israel's press, the journalists in Israel, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, in Jerusalem, that are out there promoting these fake, false narratives, die by suicide. The only problem with Israel's offensive is that it should have been taken care of earlier, for sure. But why has it drug out the way that it has? Because we're so weak. because the sickness, the cancer has spread. And you see it here at home as well, here in America. President Trump sent out a tweet this morning with all of the traitors pictured, you know, Clapper, Obama, Brennan, Comey. And it basically said, if you don't put any of them behind bars, nothing changes. The problem doesn't go away. And that's exactly right. But how long have we been hearing about this kind of internal sickness and crime being dealt with, confronted? Confronted like you would have to confront Hamas or Iran, in the case of Bibi, and Israel, the past year and a half. Satan's the god of this world. He certainly is, as I covered yesterday on the show. Gadi Taib, he speaks to this internal division over the Gaza offensive and what's really and truly behind this so-called humanitarian disaster. Play clip 18.
First of all, in Gaza, so what exactly is happening? First of all, Israel was not withholding aid. That is not true. What is going on is that the army is dragging its feet and did not implement the plan which the Southern Theater called Tochnit Ha'achra'a. How do you say Achra'a? Because the literally decision, but it's also...
Decisive finish. What were you
decisive
saying?
Victory.
Decisive victory.
It also
yeah.
means vanquishing. So yeah. It was supposed to be a final blow that would defeat Hamas. And the whole plan relied on moving the population to the south, where there will be stations operated by this American company, GHF, which will take care of the food distribution. But our legal masters in the army and without it forbade the army to move populations. And the chief of staff, which is proving to be a second version of Herzi Halevi, is only a subordinate to his own attorney general. The attorney general, as lawyers joke in this country, is the real commander of the army, because if she forbids something, nothing moves. And so we did not move the population. And the whole idea of distributing food only in humanitarian shelter areas collapsed. And so aid had to be extended to where Hamas is still in control. And that arrived in convoys that Hamas could rip off, or livzoz. How would you say livzoz?
To plunder.
To plunder.
That's what Bibi's dealing with. The attorney general, basically, a woman who hates Bibi. He can't even fire her. He can't get rid of her. So she's calling the shots. No, you can't move the population south and make sure they're fed by an American company. You've got to just go in there and still send the humanitarian aid in, even if it's to Hamas-controlled areas, and let Hamas distribute it. Well, Hamas plunders it, as you heard yesterday. And what they sell for exorbitant prices, and the people can't afford it. And so, yeah, people are suffering. But again, why? How? Then Israel says, look, we'll go in there and we'll distribute it, because when we give it to Hamas, that just empowers them. And then the UN says, no, we don't want the IDF in there. We don't want you distributing the humanitarian aid. How do you win a war like this? It would have been decisive. The enemy would have been vanquished if Israel goes in there and says, all right, civilians, head south. There's food down there for all of you. And by the way, as I said yesterday, who does this? As far as military strategy is concerned, well, only Israel, I guess. So Israel, the plan, Bibi's plan, send the population south, surround Hamas, and go in there and get rid of all the guns, the weapons, and Hamas too. And you think this would make bleeding heart liberals celebrate? You're going to get rid of the rifles in Gaza? You're going to have a gun ban in Gaza? But no, can't have that. The terrorists, you see, they need guns. They deserve guns. They deserve rifles. This is an unwinnable war because of what you heard there in the cold open. What did she say again? I'll just read it to you. So whether the fight continues to be just or not is irrelevant. Is this a just war? Well, it's irrelevant because as far as the world is concerned, Israel's guilty of genocide. Israel's now the villain. Keir Starmer says so. All these demands that he's putting upon Israel. He's getting that, Bibi is, from the UK, the brother nation. And then look at what he deals with at home. Tab wrote an article at Tablet. The trial of Netanyahu began in Jerusalem District Court over 5 years ago, 2020. Since that date, Israel has become a different country, one scarred by terror attacks and international condemnation, and also boasting stunning military victories. Meanwhile, judges and researchers have cast serious doubt on evidentiary basis for all four charges. So they bring these bogus charges against Bibi, just like they did with the lawfare against Trump. That's how they operate. They hate their own country. They certainly hate the opposition party. Tob says, it's the climax of a struggle between two opposing power structures over how Israel is to be governed and by whom. There are those that want to fundamentally transform little Israel as well, just like there are in the Obama camp. And if nothing is done to them, well, then the problem persists and it grows. It won't go away. It says here, it's also a struggle between right and left as the right keeps winning elections while the left keeps amassing institutional power beyond the reach of voters. The administrative state, in other words. Unelected judges. Judges that once they get in there, you can't get rid of them. An attorney general calling the shot, telling the Israel army, the IDF, no, you can't fight this war that way. It's got to be this way. Because if you send the population south, that would cause a humanitarian nightmare. So instead, send the aid to Hamas and let them take care of it. Well, I showed you the footage yesterday of the convoy. Hamas speeding through Gaza City, I presume, while they're firing their machine guns and rifles into the air and into the crowd in some cases. Says, finally, it's also a class struggle between the country's diverse, less affluent majority and the old guard established Ashkenazi elite. And when you have an event so cataclysmic as to simultaneously bring all three aspects, the institutional, the ideological, and the sociological, to a simultaneous showdown, you have a political supernova. I mean, there's wars on every front. There's a propaganda war, there's lawfare, and then, of course, there's the actual war with Hamas as well. And now the whole world rises against Israel and says, you better stop. You better stop. Listen again to Gadi Taub from his podcast, Clip 19.
So what happened is Hamas took control of some of the food. Some of the rest of it is stationed in the UN that's refusing with the UN. It's not even warehouses. It's out rotting out in the sun. And the UN refuses to distribute it under Israeli control. And so what happened is that there are now actually, there are pockets of hunger where Hamas is depriving its own population of food. Because if you are not Hamas connected and not strong enough, then you cannot participate in the plunder. And so food does not reach you. So we made a half measure for humanitarian consideration in order to, I don't know, bow down to imaginary clauses that are irrelevant in the Geneva Convention because our jurists have such a strict interpretation of the conventions that they basically tie the army's hands unnecessarily. And so we have ourselves created a humanitarian crisis, which we are now attempting to solve by parachuting food. So the whole situation has been mishandled because instead of being fierce and decisive. We made half measures, calculating wrongly that this would be less damaging and would be better in humanitarian from a humanitarian point of view. And what happened is that we created a crisis. We enabled Hamas to portray us as deliberately causing mass hunger, which is of course ridiculous. And the press in Israel outrageously cooperated, and then the press around the world followed.
You see how it works? Hamas, you got to give them credit. They know how the propaganda war works. They knew before October 7 how deeply divided the state of Israel is. They know how much the radical left despises Bibi Netanyahu. There are some problems with the civilian population in Gaza, but look at the root causes. At least step back. So Bibi's hands are tied behind his back. He can't go in with the strategy he had in mind from the start. And then you add to that, think about the power at Donald Trump's disposal or Keir Starmer even. I mean, you could go in there and solve this problem in a day, maybe a few days, in the tunnels and everywhere else, if you just show some strength. But like he just said there in that clip, instead of going in fiercely and instead of being decisive, in other words, instead of using power and strength together with that lion-like courage, we dealt with this problem in half measures. We kind of went, you know, we went in, we had to do something. They attacked us on October 7. They started the war. And then straight away, Israel's hand, or at least one of them, it's tied behind its back. And now here we are, 20, 21 months later. And I mean, they've had enough. The world opinion has had enough. The Jews, the Israeli state, that's the enemy. That's the pariah. I mean, they're saying it openly. France, yep, Britain. And even with what President Trump has said, like I say, it's not as bad as Keir Starmer, but it's not exactly projecting powerful strength, certainly not fierce and decisive. And this is what he had to say when he was with Keir Starmer in his trip to Turnberry over the weekend, I think it was. This is about the hostages, the remaining hostages that are still, after almost 2 years, they're still in the Gaza tunnels. Clip 9.
I always said when you get down to the final 10 or 20, you're not going to be able to make a deal with these people because they use them as a shield. And when they give them up, they no longer have a shield. And the people of Israel feel so strongly about the hostages. Some people would take a different view, but they feel so strongly about the hostages. So that's an ongoing process. Hamas has become very difficult to deal with in the last couple of days because they don't want to give up these last 20, because they think as long as we have them, they have them, they have protection. But I don't think it can work that way. So I'm speaking to Bibi Netanyahu, and we are coming up with various plans. We're going to say it's a very difficult situation. If they didn't have the hostages, things would go very quickly. But they do, and we know where they have them in some cases, and you don't want to go riding roughshod over that area because that means those hostages will be killed. Now, there are some people that would say, well, that's the price you pay, but we don't like to say that. We don't want to say that.
Half measures, you see. You can't go in and run roughshod. You can't be fierce and decisive. We've already established that. But then, as he said there in the same clip, you can't really negotiate with them either when you get down to 20 hostages because that's their leverage. So what can you do? I guess nothing. I guess just have a ceasefire. Just let Hamas survive, which has been the objective from the beginning. That's why they took 250 hostages that day. It was their ticket to survival. And they've got the UN support, Hamas does. They've got a lot of support in Britain. They've got a lot of support in America. American cities or universities like Berkeley. Oh, yes. They've got the support of prime ministers. And you've got President Trump for his part. I mean, maybe not projecting just pitiful weakness, but it's not exactly, you know, fierce strength either. Half measures. Here's more from a reporter who obviously says the pressure needs to be put upon it. Not Hamas. No, on the pariah. The villain. And that would be Israel. Clip 7.
Is there any use at all in pressuring Israel now to come to some sort of longer-term solution?
Well, you could make the case that you're rewarding people, that, you know, you're rewarding Hamas if you do that. And I don't think they should be rewarded. So I'm not in that camp, to be honest. But a lot of things have been stolen. They send money, they send food, and Hamas steals it. So it's a tricky little game. But we're going to make sure we have some very good people. They're going to be watching it.
Who is going to be running those food centers for you, and what kind of oversight?
Well, we're going to be dealing with Israel, and we think they can do a good job of it. And they want to do it.
Of monitoring the food centers?
No, they want to do it. The food centers, yeah.
So he does acknowledge that food is being plundered by Hamas. As I say, you saw the clip yesterday. Not as bad as Keir Starmer. He's up in the UK saying that Israel better agree to a ceasefire no matter what. No demands for Hamas, really, to speak of. All the demands, all the pressure, it's on Israel. Starmer says the UN would then retake control of distributing aid. Right now they can't do it because they don't want the Israelis involved. That's all right if Hamas takes it and does whatever it wants with it. I mean, this is unbelievable. The sickness here. And then he just says, yeah, we're going to recognize a Palestinian state. Well, what territory would that be? You can't annex any part of the West Bank, says Starmer. Well, there's lots of Jewish settlements in the West Bank. So do they have to go in, Israel, and uproot their own citizens like they did in 2005 in Gaza? How'd that work out for Israel? And then who would lead, as I said earlier? Who would be the leader? Because if you just subject it to a vote, it's probably going to end up just like it did in 2006. And then Hamas, I mean, they enter into that coalition government with Fatah. Now, that's supposed to be the moderate wing. And then the next year, Hamas said, you know what? We're just going to forcibly take over and turn this into a police state. And so they started throwing Fatah members off of tall buildings. That is Gaza's government. Melanie Phillips, it says, like French President Emmanuel Macron, who has also threatened to recognize Palestine at the UN in September, Starmer is thus rewarding Hamas for its barbaric and depraved pogrom in southern Israel on October 7, 2023. The Hamas carries out the worst massacre against Jews since the Holocaust. And how are they rewarded? What are they rewarded with? Well, I guess if Starmer and Macron have it their way, they get a state. They get a Palestinian state. He's blaming Israel, not Hamas, for the appalling situation in Gaza, says Phillips. This even though Hamas is responsible for the war by slaughtering 1,200 Israelis, taking more than, well, you know all the stats, but they're just numbers. And listen, we've got to, like Pierce says in the cold open, I mean, you've got to just have a proportional response. I guess if you go in and only 1,200 civilians are casualties of war or collateral damage, then you got to stop. No, nothing about surrender or winning the war. It's just you show a little force up to a point. And then whether it's just or not, I mean, it's irrelevant. You got to stop, you see. These are the rules. I mean, this attorney general in Israel, well, according to the Geneva Convention, you can't move the population south. So just take care of the war. Now, you can only go so long in this war because I'm running the army. Who does this on the other side? Look at the way Hamas and these people operate. Look at the neighborhood Israel is living in. Melanie Phillips says whether he is kowtowing to Britain's increasingly powerful Muslim bloc or to his own hard left is irrelevant. Just as he campaigned for the hard left Jeremy Corbyn to become prime minister at the last general election while ostensibly holding his nose, he really believes he is being principled and decent while plumbing the depths of moral bankruptcy. She's talking about Starmer. He believes he's being decent, and he doesn't realize how sick and deranged his thinking is, his reasoning is. Britain's been taken over in many respects by a powerful Muslim bloc. I gave you that earlier, that article. Just the appalling crimes that we're inviting into our nation. Or nations, plural. They wear the suit and earnest spectacles of a human rights lawyer. It is today's banality of evil, and it's frying the Western brain. Look at what it's doing to our brains, to our minds. 2 Timothy 1 talks about God's spirit being the spirit of a sound mind. Do you see a lot of evidence of that in the world today? Soundness of mind? Soundness of reasoning? That's spiked online. It says, Keir Starmer's blackmailing of Israel is a depraved new low. That's what it amounts to. Israel is being blackmailed. Israel's being threatened. Israel's the villain. Israel is the pariah. I talk about Hamas rejoicing behind closed doors. The devil, too. What must he think of these kinds of sophisticated sounding leaders wearing the spectacles and fine suits and making Israel out to be a villain? You know, the late Ron Fraser, our very own at the Trumpet magazine, he wrote an article, I think it's like 20 years ago, on the history of the Israeli state. This was back in the early 2000s. And I think the title was From Hero to Outcast. I mean, how does that happen? When people are looking at the Israeli state in 1948, I mean, they had no army, they had no air force, no navy. They had four or five countries attack them the very day they declared their independence. And somehow they survived. Somehow they won. At that time, a lot of people in Israel, a lot of people in Britain, and a lot of people in America knew it was a miracle from God. And they cheered Israel on like you would David fighting Goliath. But what happened? What has happened since then to our nations? Well, I touched on it yesterday. We're being destroyed from within, and we're doing so much of the damage to ourselves. The sickness is real. This truly is a new low for the government. It's moral blackmail masquerading as diplomacy. It's barely veiled. It's a barely veiled threat against a supposed ally. I mean, we're brothers. That's what basically what they're saying. Starmer is essentially telling Israel that unless it lays down its arms, Britain will reward its enemies. Now keep in mind, Hamas's objective here, it's right in their charter, it's to destroy Jews, the entire Israeli state. And so Starmer is basically saying, unless you accept the fact that they want to murder you, and unless you do let that happen, then we will back Hamas. We'll work with the UN to expand the Palestinian state, to be bigger than the Gaza Strip, to include the West Bank, hopefully. And then Israel's surrounded by Hamas, essentially. Where is this leading? I don't have time to get to some of the other clips from just what one by PragerU on the Holocaust. Just some basics from history that's not really that long ago. And you see, it's the same spirit today. This Jew hatred. The Telegraph. This is the darkest day in British foreign policy since the invasion of Iraq. Take a step back, and the prime minister's blind betrayal of the Jewish state is breathtaking. Of course, the war is horrendous. Of course, the Israeli government includes some regrettable far-right figures. Of course, mistakes have been made. Again, even that, I mean, why so weak? You're the Telegraph. You're supposed to be conservative. So just come out blasting away. This is treasonous behavior on the part of our prime minister. He's working against our country. We see it all the time now in the nations of Israel. Stabbing little Judah in the back. How does it go from hero to outcast in just, what, 70, 80 years? How would Starmer's Britain fare if we were invaded by jihadis, saw 1,200 of our citizens butchered, lost 258 hostages, and faced an enemy embedded in tunnels beneath one of the most densely populated areas on Earth? I shudder to think. Well, the first part of that on being invaded by jihadis, I think some would say that's already happened. Because as soon as Hamas carried out that massacre, the worst since the Holocaust, people took to the streets in London to cheer it on, to celebrate it. These are British citizens, right? Well, most of them have immigrated from Islamic countries. Just invite them in. And in some cases, hey, if they're Jeffrey Epstein in Islamic clothing, that's okay. That's okay. We'll turn a blind eye to it. We'll cover it up for 10, 20 years. It says, Israel is not trying to kill, starve, or oppress civilians. It's simply trying to defeat the enemy that attacked its people so brutally almost 2 years ago and to get its hostages back. Where is there a plan, whether it's from America or Starmer's government, to try to get those hostages back? The demands are on Israel and Israel alone. This is Douglas Murray. And, you know, it's a very simple point, but it does speak to just how pervasive the Jew hatred is in the world today. He's on, I think it's Piers Morgan's show with a Jew-hating commentator. This is clip 8.
If you put up a poster to a missing dog in any Western city, that poster stays up. In city after city in America, posters of abducted Jewish children, including a 10-month-old baby, were put up and were ripped down by people who have been indoctrinated into hate of Jews. Nobody would rip down the poster of a missing dog, but from Dublin to Berkeley, they ripped down posters of abducted Jewish children.
From Dublin, that's Ireland, to Berkeley, that's California. Yeah, you put up a hostage, a victim, and some of our Muslim citizens will come along and tear it down. Maybe not even Muslim, just a radical left winger. It's a Jew. It's a picture of a little Jew, even a baby Jew. So we got to take it down. I mean, I've made this point before with respect to children molested by pedophiles. And how that, I mean, that in some cases, that doesn't arouse anger like, you know, abusing a pet would, an animal. And nobody wants to see that happen either. But the way we're treating fellow human beings, or in some cases, children. What about those girls who were sex trafficked in Rotherham, starting when they were 11, 12 years of age, and then abused by a police officer to go with it? What about those victims? What about all, as I've said before, all the Jeffrey Epstein victims? Little children. My father says in the Key of David booklet, most people who hate the Jews don't even know why they do. They don't even know why. He says, can we see Satan behind such lies and hatred? It doesn't even make sense. It's delusional. It's deranged. I mean, in the case of radical Islam, it's religiously motivated, as Melanie Phillips is courageous enough to bring out. But as for the sophisticated elites, just spewing so much Jew hatred, why? Where is it coming from? It's irrational. It's unhinged. And, well, as we know, it comes straight from the mind of the devil. What you saw, and look at how quickly people are forgetting all that happened. I played in one of my SCP lectures, 2-3 minutes of this. I forget the name of the kibbutz down in southern Israel, but it's an aerial shot of just all that these monsters, these barbarians, carried out. Just total destruction from one house to the next. Burning, looting, murdering. Just looking from one building to the next, looking for a Jew. I mentioned the example before, the Hamas kid who called home on a cell phone, bragging to his parents about murdering 10 Jews. He was so excited. He was on a suicide mission, trying to kill as many Jews as he could before he got killed. And he, I don't know how old he was, he's probably in his early 20s. And this world is in desperate need of true education. God's family, I mean, we're going to be responsible. I was just reading it actually in chapter 1 of the Key of David book this morning. How that we need to teach our young people that they're there to be teachers, there to be royalty, and they've got a big job on their hands. To stop the madness and to teach God's law and to teach the way of love to those that have been brought up in an environment of hate and suffering and carnage, where we celebrate death, destruction, murder, or pedophilia, sex trafficking. It's not God's world. Listen to the history the Israeli foreign minister alludes to. You wish more people would bring this up because, as I say, it's not like World War II and the Holocaust are that long ago. We're talking 75, 80 years ago. This is clip 11.
We are aware of the fact that there are countries in Europe today with a huge Muslim populations. Sometimes it affects the policies of their governments. But this cannot and will not lead Israel to commit suicide. We won't allow a jihadist terror state in the heart of our ancient homeland. It ain't gonna happen. Israel will not be the Czechoslovakia of the 21st century. We won't sacrifice our own existence for the sake of the appeasement countries. We won't give up our basic interests for the sake of internal politics in certain countries that lost control over their own streets. But still they are arrogantly presumed to decide for what's good for our security. The international pressure on Israel during critical days in the negotiations for a ceasefire and hostage deal has already caused Hamas to harden its position. This pressure is directly sabotaging the chances for a ceasefire and hostage deal. It is only pushing towards military escalation by hardening Hamas's stance. Everyone who is worried about the humanitarian situation must ask himself, who is responsible for the suffering of the Palestinians in Gaza?
Who is responsible? Hamas has been running Gaza for 20 years. We're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of Israel forcibly removing all of those Jews in Gaza. Gush Katif and some of these other kibbutzim, and I think it was like 10,000 people. I'm going to play footage of that in a future show. And for 20 years, or at least 19 of those 20 years, Hamas has maintained a death grip over its own people. Hamas has been the government in charge of the civilians in Gaza. Who is responsible? Hamas orchestrated and carried out the massacre of Jews less than 2 years ago and has been at war with Israel since. Who's responsible for the suffering in Gaza? And why is there such a need on the part of the corrupt left-wing international media to create a narrative based on a hoax? If Israel, why, like Doug Murray points out, if Israel's guilty of genocide, why has the Palestinian population in Gaza over the last 15, 20 years increased by about 1 million people? And why are there 1 million or 2 million Arabs living in Israel, Israeli Arabs? And why aren't there more people out there like Douglas Murray or Melanie Phillips that are telling the truth? And why isn't there more strength coming from Western leaders, particularly Israelite leaders, from the Israelite nations? We're living in the last days for sure. This is the latest trumpet. I mean, I've already given you this quote numerous times on the show, but my father says about Israel's rising lion, Bibi Netanyahu, what Israel did to neutralize Iran teaches all mankind a powerful lesson, or powerful lessons about what it takes to overcome evil. I mean, just look at what, I mean, President Trump was bragging about it right away. That 36-hour mission that he says just totally obliterated the nuclear program. Well, I mean, it did set it back. And Iran has gone quiet, and they have been, to a large extent, they've been neutralized. If that's the case with Iran, how much could Hamas be completely neutralized or obliterated if you had America, Britain, and Judah, and then a unified state in each of those cases, and not, you know, with attorneys generals, you know, fighting against the prime minister or the president, these rogue justices, and you were prepared to use some fierce-like, decisive, lion-like strength. I mean, you could just swat Hamas like you would a gnat. But we won't do it. What does the Bible say about the pride in our power? What does the Bible say about our will being broken? I mentioned that meeting that Bibi was at in Jerusalem. I think it was a collection of Jew people who are of the Jewish faith and Christians, the evangelicals. Listen to what Prime Minister Netanyahu had to say about Israel's history and its relationship with the Bible, clip 12.
I had the great privilege of being invited to speak at the joint session of the American Congress. And I look on the wall and I see the quote from Moses. That's our common tradition, our common wellspring. We're immersed in the Bible. We live the Bible. We have a future because we have a past. And that past is shared by millions, hundreds of millions around the world. When I, as a soldier, marched in the hills and valleys and plains of Israel, I thought of Joshua and of David. And the prophets of Israel and the kings of Israel and the judges and later the Maccabees. It's not a theoretical thing. It's something that comes to our feet, into our hearts.
Yes.
And it's something, it's a living thing.
Yeah.
And all the places are real. You know that. I'm saying that to your audience. You come to Israel. These places that you read about, yeah, they're not on the moon. They're right here.
Yeah.
Actually in a small but beautiful country.
Yes.
But a giant country, because that's where, as I said, the great ideas of humanity,
yeah,
and faith emerged. So the Bible is a living thing for me. And it's not only for me. It's what animated our people to return to our biblical homeland, to forge a life anew, to overcome odds that no people overcame with that great engine of faith and tradition. And the Bible says the Bible is the base. It's the stone on which we stand.
Yes.
And so that's doesn't change. It only gets more so, stronger with the challenges that we face.
You want to discuss, I know I'm out of time, but you want to talk about why Satan hates the Jews so much? And really all the nations of Israel in particular. Well, that's part of it right there, that history. And as I said yesterday, we certainly have our sins. And this angers God to see how we celebrate so much sinful behavior. But he's right. I mean, the Bible foundation, that's the stone on which our nations have stood. We're not standing on that stone with respect to morality and righteous behavior, far from it. But the point of it is, Satan hates that connection with the Bible and with the God of the Bible. He hates it. He hates Jews. He hates Israelites. He hates the Bible. He hates God. So when you look at the spiritual war that we're engaged in, I mean, it's intense. It's intense. And Satan, I mean, he wants to intimidate us, pressure us into fighting the war with half measures, not with fierce lion-like courage. He wants us to compromise. He wants us ultimately to surrender, to give in, to quit. And again, when you look at the spiritual battlefield, I mean, that's what a lot of God's people have done in these last days. I don't have time to plug all the literature. The one that came to mind on church history, we've got a wonderful book on that. I mentioned Mystery of the Ages yesterday. U.S. and Britain in Prophecy for the identity or the master key that unlocks your understanding to all of Bible prophecy. You can get to any of these publications at our website, thetrumpet.com, or by calling our 800 number and requesting your free copies of these wonderful books. That's all we have time. I took you a little over, but I won't charge you for those extra 3 minutes. But that's all we have time for. I can't go any further. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.